Blog Talk Radio.
Poetry Revolution and the virtual book launch for Trees in the Garden of Ashes, Poetry Resilience. I'm James P. Wagner, and I'm here with Nick Hale. Say hi, Nick.
Hey, James. Hey, everyone. How are you doing?
Well, I can't speak for everybody else, but I'm doing pretty good, although I'd like to think most of the people out there are doing pretty good, too, if the amount of people who sent in recordings for tonight's launch is any indication. I'd say a lot of them are doing pretty decent, or at least powering through. This is going to be a pretty packed show tonight, people. When we've normally done these things, we've had anywhere from 12 to 15 recordings. Tonight we have over 33 wonderful poets from the Resilience Anthology sent in poems for us to enjoy, so this is going to be really good. A lot of people are really excited about this anthology, Poetry Resilience. I can't imagine why, especially right now with, how things are. I think people kind of needed a little bit of an uplift, so tonight we're hoping to give a little bit of that. Before we even get started, I have some good news. Everybody knows that from now until the end of the show tonight, 50% of the profits from all book sales are going to be donated to Feeding America. Before this, we actually had the goal of providing 4,000 meals to the hungry, and we reached that goal before the launch even started. So far, we've sold 94 copies of the book, and I know we're going to hit at least 100 before this recording is done. So I want to thank everybody who pre-ordered already, and it's going to a good cause. So congratulations for that.
Wow, that's amazing! Thanks, everybody.
I know. Who says virtual poetry launches can't work, right? So considering we have a lineup, we're going to get right into it. I will be giving updates as the launch goes on about if any more copies sold, because I'm keeping a watch on it, telethon style. So first up, we have a poem from Ryan Boynack. Little tidbit about him, he was actually in the first poetry anthology I ever edited. He was one of the original 39. So let's give it up for him.
Hi, my name is Ryan Boynack, and this poem is called Writer/Dancer. Lost habits, long pauses, especially after vulnerability, ends of songs. We believe like paper near fire. Hope is a luxury that neither of us can afford, especially at this time in forever's history. Still try the things we are not permitted to breathe, carry with us heavy rise. Pretend to be when the world is in your voice. Out of a million possible outcomes, only one ends positively. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the names that just seeing it kind of takes me all the way back to the beginning. Just a little tidbit for everybody out there. There were over 90 poets in this anthology, so having a third of them actually kind of with us here in virtual spirit tonight actually is really exciting for me. I know that when we do live events, we typically get, roughly 40% of the people in it if it's a local anthology come to it. But poets in this anthology were all over the United States and all over various parts of the world. So just having this many kind of in the virtual proximity is a real treat, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I agree. And it's great to hear all these people that we've heard before, because some of them we've heard them read before as we've done in local events, but hearing them read together, essentially, is nice.
Definitely. So next one up is Kim King.
If We Were Quarantined by Kim King. If we were quarantined together, I would wake you with coffee, black, and a kiss before our breakfast of scrambled eggs and toast, no jam. We would catch up on the news and glide into our favorite chairs, toes touching, fingers connecting to the internet and beyond until lunch, which could be served back under freshly laundered sheets or not at all. It's a crisis. We have plenty of booze. An aperitivo starts at 2 o'clock with an Aperol spritz or a glass of wine. We have no milk or butter, but a brownie mix suffices for that sugar fix. And Netflix leads us to the future or back to Casablanca, where Rick lies to Elsa and you lie with me waiting for that plane to Portugal, which never arrives. But still, we stand there in the fog listening.
Thank you, Kim. Yeah, I know that part about Netflix and lots of binge-watching lots of shows during all of this, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you realize shows that you didn't even know that they had.
Right.
Next up, she's been here on BardCon Virtual quite a few times before, but always a pleasure to hear her. Give it up for Christina Norcross.
Hi, my name is Christina Norcross. I'm one of the contributors for the Local Gems Press anthology, Trees in a Garden of Ashes, Poems of Resilience. I'm delighted to be here to help promote the virtual launch for this special anthology, and I'll be reading my poem, River Source of Strength. River Source of Strength. Knowing eyes contain the warmth of summer's sun-kissed rays, and the patience of endless days. This was my grandmother's all-embracing grace, bestowed with each gentle cradle of my palm. Stories of family emerged on her tongue as she held my hand. History passed from skin to skin this way. She spoke of the island of her ancestors, goats clinging to cliffs, and the persistence of the people who made a life there. She brought this steadfast devotion with her to the mainland. It followed her every movement like a feather of smoke. From the job she earned based on her ability to sew a special button, to her brave first steps after having a stroke. To find courage at every new beginning is the great river source of strength. Thank you.
Always a pleasure hearing Christina read.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely think that you can feel the resilience as you're listening to her read that poem. It's excellent.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think one of the great things about a hard period, I mean, there's a lot that's not great about it, but one of the great things is sometimes you dig into your reservoir and you find strength you didn't know that you had.
Yeah, so, definitely. Yeah,
next up we actually have... a husband and wife poetry couple, Abby and John DeSantis. Going to do Abby first, and then John. These are two poets from Pennsylvania that we've had the pleasure to meet a couple times out there. So, give it up first for Abby DeSantis.
The Morrow, by Abby DeSantis. Time dissolving into itself, a shapeless continuum of hours and days. Of sadness and isolation. A vulnerable flesh concealed by masked fear. Only buildings, concrete and steel, stand in quiet defiance. Empty streets lie silent under the pounding hooves of the pale horse. Just as light turns into cover of darkness, the sun will rise, bestowing a new day, illuminating hearts and souls. For we are no ancient civilization to lie in ruin for future generations. We will discover today is not our last tomorrow.
I really like that last line.
Oh, yeah, me too. I think yeah. It really brings everything together.
Oh, yeah. And now for the second half of the poetic married couple, John DeSantis.
Faith, a John DeSantis. Faith is belief. Belief in the self beyond. Beyond the beginning and the end of this brief appearance. Faith is belief, belief in a power beyond our strength, an explanation we can't explain. Faith is belief, belief in reason beyond the conceit of science and logical exegesis. Faith is belief, belief beyond all reason and sense that we be able to outlive death. Faith is belief, belief that we can do whatever we ought not or cannot do. Faith is belief, belief that when we pour ourselves and all our assets out to nothing, we will be filled again, and the universe or God or whatever we believe will rush to grant our greatest wish.
Quite a fan of that one as well.
At the risk of sounding like a broken record, yeah, me too.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, like there's one quote, I forget who said it, but, you know, about faith. It says, you know, when the clouds are out and it's raining, you still believe in the existence of the sun.
That's a good one.
Yeah, so that poem kind of reminded me of that quote for a while, which, you know, is a good thing. It's something I think we all need to remember right now. And, you know, I love this anthology. This, like, it was really a pleasure to edit this during, you know, this period when there's, like, a lot of turmoil, a lot of uncertainty out there, having, you know, seeing all these little bits of, you know, strength and determination, you know, in poetry form, and the way that the poet just very elegantly, you know, string words together with this. It was like, I mean, I think it really helped my own mental health, you know, during this whole period. So, you know, if people need a little bit of resilience, I definitely, you know, recommend getting this book and reading through it. It could probably help you, too.
Yeah, I mean, the more I hear, the more I'm looking forward to getting my copy and reading through it.
Yeah, definitely. So next up is Melissa Seymour.
Greenways by Melissa Seymour. Breeze and sunlight providing a simultaneous bliss. Butterfly wings and tall wildflowers wave to passersby. A distant humming of the water treatment plant, a reminder that waste doesn't mean complete loss. Mistakes can begin to be cleansed by time and walks by the river. Overturning stones of truth, one by one, water surrounding you, running fast, furious, and clouded, can be tamed by skimming those rocks. Acknowledging them one by one, sailing across the water as one ripple becomes two. Forgiveness and honesty grows exponentially. Loss and waste begin to flow downstream. While you peer along the river's edge, breeze and sunlight providing a simultaneous bliss.
I was able to get really good imagery out of that one.
Yeah, me too. It's one of those poems where you just want to close your eyes while you're listening to it.
Yeah, poetry can be really good for meditation. I mean, you know, at least like guided not thinking type of meditation, but guided meditation where you're trying to escape somewhere. So, you know, so certain poets have a really good way of just bringing you to what they're describing just with words. It's great.
Yeah, agreed.
Next up, Sarah Sarna.
Genesis. The world offers itself to your imagination. A slow down, step back, breathe deeply world. You are closer now to magic than you have ever been, will be again. Be still and listen to the whisper of the earth. She will tell you what she needs, what can be let go. Spare no more than a fleeting moment mourning yesterday. The past does not mourn for you. This is the Genesis. And you are the hand of God.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know why that one, like, hearing that kind of reminds me a little bit of, like, you know, when a sports team, you know, if they're running into trouble or they're trying to reach a new goal where they kind of cut back and go back to basics, you know, kind of, you know, go over the fundamentals again, because, you know, I feel like that was like this whole period in a way has really made us like reevaluate. I think that poem, you know, like what's necessary, what maybe isn't so necessary, and what, you know, where our attention might be better spent. I feel like that poem kind of really touched on that sentiment.
Yeah, I agree.
Next up, he's the Bard's treasurer. He's editor of the Chaos Anthology, which we'll probably be having another virtual launch for, you know, whenever that anthology is done. I know people looking forward to that one. Give it up for Mark Rosen.
A morning at the FEMA DRC. A woman comes into the FEMA site, speaks with the staffers, then comes into the room I'm in, to the left. A screening room with comfy seats, the local news on TV, and most importantly, a giant pile of clothes all over the stage up at the front. We exchange words, and she asks, "What's all this clothing for?" A Red Cross volunteer asks if she needs anything. In these times, with a nor'easter approaching, and the woman herself underdressed for the temperatures, warm clothing for her and her daughter is clearly called for. The young mother hesitates. Stubborn pride telling her to balk. She's fine. Save the clothing for someone who really needs it. Her protests fall on the deaf ears of her newfound personal shoppers. Red Cross and FEMA ask about what she'd like. Tell her how great she'll look in this coat. Help her fill a giant storage bag with the yield of her free shopping spree. Tears of joy stream down her eyes. After enduring silence and indifference from agencies, her daughter's school, doctors, she finally laughs. She finally smiles. Clothes damaged in the rains replaced with new. Needs neglected for lack of shelter and warmth met. For this family, it won't be as cold a winter as it seemed.
Well, as usual, Mark gives a good dramatic reading. And one thing for those out there who don't know, he actually worked for FEMA for a while. So that poem came from a real experience. So well done, Mark.
Yeah, I was going to say, knowing what I know about Mark, it sounds like it's probably based on a true story.
Yeah, definitely. Just want to give everybody out there listening an update. During the launch right now, we've sold another 6 copies of the anthology. So we just reached 100 copies sold. So congratulations for everybody who made that happen. I think Feeding America is going to be really happy with what we're going to be donating to them. So this is where, like, an applause track would go really good. I keep forgetting to upload one of those.
One day.
One day, yeah. There we go. Next, give it up for Wendy Hoffman.
Recognition. By Wendy Hoffman. My old dog sleeps, doesn't care to walk. Now I go alone. Couples stroll close together. A large black dog with beseeching eyes circles me, sniffs hedges, circles back. I turn the corner at the wisteria vine by the neighborhood park. Black dog sculpts figures apes around me. Are you asking me to help? With all the sunny people on the street, the dog chooses me. Light flashes on tag numbers, jingling from his red collar. But needing space and time, I don't carry a phone. A kind-looking man with 2 dogs, big and little, standing in the middle of the field, calls from his. The owner drives up, hollers, "Peppy!" Peppy swooshes to her like wind. Still, I feel the dog stretch his paw into the air, unfurl a thread, tug me toward life.
Well, I don't know about you, but I always love poems that have to do with dogs. Sometimes we can take lessons from animals about, how to handle our own stuff, because sometimes they seem to have it better together than humans do.
Yeah, definitely.
Next up, Joanne Kennedy Frazier.
Good news in troubled times after Thich Nhat Hanh's The Good News. The daily news broadcasts only fear, divisiveness, and pain. Let us air good news that we may hear it and benefit. The important news is we have eyes to see the deep green magnolia and nose to inhale its white flowers' fragrances. We have ears to catch the wren's aria carried on breathless breezes. We have time to look at forsythia blossoms, yellow arms waving haphazardly to the world. We have the leisure to throw our heads back, arms held wide, to welcome the gift of the sun. The breaking news is that fear will pass, and we will journey to new places and spaces.
Yeah, really like the subject of that one, and it's very true, the old adage, if it bleeds, it reads. You know, every day they're focusing, you know, on the news. It's like, you know, alien invasion, you know, horrible meteor heading for Earth, you know, not like, hey, community comes together to feed their hungry or, you know, good things that, you know, could uplift us.
Right. It's a good reminder that there's a lot more out there than the negative that you hear all the time. And it's really easy if you watch the news or if you listen to a lot of pundits to sort of feel like this is the worst time and everything is bad. But there's a lot of good out there. You just have to look for it.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, especially in a world with so many people and so many things going on every day, if you look for something bad every day, you'll find it. You look for something good every day, you'll find it. So it's just a matter of which lens you're looking at. So, you know, thank you for that reminder. Next up, he's been on several times before, too. BardCon Virtual, give it up for Alex Edward Boudreau.
Rescue Dogs by Alex Edwards Boudreau. I knew a little girl who had a dog. Tiny he was, but what a ferocious defender. Once, he leapt on the couch when she screamed in distress, convinced he existed just to protect her. I knew a dog who survived a bad crash. The curve was too sharp for the speeding Land Rover. The driver near death, the dog sprang to action and danced on the shoulder till someone pulled over. I knew an old lady who had a dog, her humble friend, on earth her sole delight. He crossed his paws each evening on her bed to pray with her she'd make it through the night.
Well, as I said, I always like doggy poems.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I know James would really enjoy this one.
Yeah, definitely. Especially anything about, you know, a rescue, you know, or, you know, giving a, you know, a dog or a cat a better life. And then, you know, because the symbiosis of you help them and then they help you, you know, it's like I think people forget sometimes just how deep that bond goes and how much good both sides really can get out of it.
Yeah.
So, next up, Robert Fleming.
Trees in a Garden of Ashes, reading. Page 43. Robert Fleming. Living in the United States, State of Delaware, City of Lewis. Poem Passed Over. Here, 'cause I was born after. My great-granny, firstborn, was inside a ram blood-painted door in Egypt. Here, 'cause I was asleep in a house, next to a house bombed to separate Quebec from Canada. Here, 'cause I hid behind a bathroom door or behind a chair, when Daddy brush beat sister, who liquored at 12. here because a president said AIDS. Gave AIDS dollars, and CDC found transmissions and bred a pill. Here, because I marched the Millennium March. March day, the Capitol steps were bird pooed, not rainbow blood. Passed over in Egypt. Passed over in Quebec. Passed over in Alcohol House. Passed over by AIDS. Passed over as gay. Passed over.
Wow.
Wow, that was really powerful.
Yeah. I've noticed the consistency of powerfulness when it comes to Robert Fleming, both his words and his readings.
Yeah.
So thank you, Robert. Next up, Yvonna Fast.
New Reality by Yvonna Fast. The world is in chaos. Uncertainty reigns. Everything is closed. Schools, colleges, churches, libraries, pools, gyms, hair salons. No more book discussion groups, no more water aerobics, no more concerts, theater productions, art gallery openings. Restaurants are takeout and delivery only. Disconnected, separated, alone, we don't congregate. We practice social distancing. Our new reality, surreal, yet real. Rest, relax, read. Life has slowed, a hiatus, but the earth still turns and rotates. Listen to dripping icicles, gurgling brooks, melting snow, robins, blackbirds, bluebirds return, filling the air with melodies. Crocuses bloom, then daffodils, then tulips, then irises. Spring will come, then summer. This too shall pass.
Yeah, I think that sums it up pretty well, especially, you know, that this too shall pass. That's something my grandfather always used to say about pretty much anything bad, and, you know, he survived World War II, so I'm pretty sure he would know.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing I think sometimes it sounds like people say it a lot, but it's the kind of thing that there's a reason why people say it a lot. It's something that you need to remember, and it can really help, especially at the start of a catastrophe, to keep that in mind that, you know, this just because it's bad right now doesn't mean it's going to be just like this forever.
Oh, yeah. Well, I also think it's like there's a difference between hearing something and really taking it in, you know, like I know me personally, there's been sayings and quotes and stuff I've heard my entire life that it took me years of life experience before I really grasped the meaning of what it actually said. So, you know, I know sometimes with, you know, quotes, you're just like, oh, yeah, that again. But sometimes really, you know, really absorbing it makes you understand it at a whole different level.
Yeah, definitely.
So, next up is Emily Sue Sloan.
Balance. Outdoors, a chorus celebrates the morning light. Songbirds back from winter havens, busy with springtime preparations. Something normal in the silence of halted human activity, as we wait for the coronavirus to peter out and die. Inflatable dragon punctured by some invisible lance, we hope. The birds don't care if we are here to notice. They fetch grass, twigs, and debris, weave homes tucked in among branches that will soon provide cover for their chicks. They'll feed the hatchlings, teach them to forage and fly. The immatures will build up stamina for long journeys ahead when daylight dwindles and nights grow cold. At least that much is predictable.
Yeah, that one reminds me a little bit of the old Serenity Prayer, which I'm sure I'm going to butcher, but the idea is give me, the courage to change what I can, the patience to, live with what I can't, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know I butchered it, but you get the idea. that poem kind of reminded me of that, about not really obsessing about what you can't, control or what you can't predict, but rather looking at what you can and, looking at the constant. And sometimes, even before this crazy stuff happened, the world was in a state of constant flux. So sometimes focusing on the constant is really good.
Yeah. And it's sort of that reminder is sort of the first step to remembering that this will pass. And you might not be able to affect how it passes, but it will.
Yeah, the seasons always change, So winter turns into spring. So, next up, Anne McCready.
This is Anne McCready. My poem, In Trees Grow in a Garden of Ashes, is called Next Step. To feel your feet shift the body's weight, so your heels lift to let your heart know you are ready to move forward. To raise your chin like a frightened child and lengthen your gaze as you try your best to be brave enough to find the horizon of your next step. To swallow the knot of courage that is stuck in your throat as you taste the salt of the days you had to do things for yourself. To blink back tears against the cold wind of what could happen as you zip up your coat, a gift from someone good who believed in tomorrows. This is Anne McCready with my poem, Next Step.
Thank you, Anne. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, me too.
So just another quick update for everybody. We've sold another 9 copies of the book live while we've been listening to this wonderful poetry. So we're now up to 109 copies sold. So thank you, everybody who's been buying the copies while I've been listening, and everybody who pre-ordered this last week after we sent out the notice about the launch. So yay! Next up, we've got a pair of poets. One of them is Robert Savino, who is the Suffolk County, New York Poet Laureate Emeritus, and then following him we will have Christian Martinez, who is actually his young mentee. So give it up for Robert Savino.
Flower fields of dreams. The buildings across the street are dark, doors shut tight in hope of discovery. So much unknown. It'll come to us all in time. Time not to leave a moment ignored. Time not predictable as one might want. Even the evergreen has become neverlasting, and I, in the circle of us all, live in its shadow. A shadow of preparation that turns pages to the obituaries. So many gone with no time for forgiveness. My vision has been compromised by shadows of distraction in dark corners of shorter days. The earth's breath still circulates life inside, though some may have died from it. In a field of flowers, a bright breeze stirs silver leaves on the surface as I prepare to shovel a path into the flesh of creation.
I always love Robert's poetry. He always has a very commanding presence live, and he has a very soothing voice when you hear it recorded. And being a, Poet Laureate of, former Poet Laureate in my county, definitely knows what he's doing. He's editor of the No Distance Between Us Italian American anthology series, so that was great. And he's also part of the Poetry Mentor Program, as you'll hear in Christian Martinez. Now, this next poet is only 12 years old, and he's almost been published more times than I have. and I'm only slightly exaggerating on that one because I've lost track of how many times this kid has been published, like at least a dozen times at this point, I would say. And in fact, he's had his poetry in so many places, in big part to Robert Savino's tutelage, that he's actually put together his first book of poetry that is actually going to be published by Local Gems Press. It actually should have been published already, but it got delayed a little bit because we couldn't have a book launch live because of, that silly little thing that's happening in the world. But when this lifts up, we'll be launching that and having a good, nice physical book launch for him. And I'm just super impressed with this kid because, I came out with my first book of not-so-good poetry when I was, 16 that I, self-published myself. And, I don't need to tell you, Nick, because you still have some of the evidence that I'm like. So let's enjoy this brilliant young poet, Christian Martinez.
Hi, I'm Christian Martinez, and I'll be reading my poem called Strength. Feeling as if you can no longer go on, feeling weak, trembling with fear, waves crashing down on you, the heavy weight crushes your soul. While enduring the pain, thoughts creep inside my head. I can overcome this. I'm stronger than my fears. I will overcome it all. A choice that is hard to make, finding the strength to battle on.
See what I mean, everyone?
imagine writing like that at that age.
Yeah. Imagine writing like that last week. I had the fortune of having Christian be like my concert opener act at my latest physical book launch back in December, and he was great. So thank you, Christian, and thank you, Robert, again for not only your own poetry but helping to mentor the next generation of poets. So next up, Terry Joseph Cox.
Promise. 10 years cacophony, yet crescent wingtips dip, altered skyline mere redirection. White-breasted swallows of Argentina have returned. 1, 10, 30. Loyalists huddle beneath overpasses. Serenity blankets valley with dawn's fog, hazy headlights steady. Red brake lights pulse. Decade of scaffolding shouldered them out, bully on the playground. Who could have known? Capistrano, red tiled roofs, turistas collecting trinkets. Beckoning sky and dreams of ladybugs lure beyond 200-year homestead. Magnetic field summons with promises of Big Bear, Chino Hills. Squee of arrival, we're back. We've adopted. We will always return.
Very lovely. I get the hint with, there's a lot of nature theme that's been going on, not just with this anthology, but in a lot of the poetry that has been written, I think, during the COVID crisis. A lot of the other readings we've done, there's been, a heavy emphasis on nature and, seeds being planted and things growing and, things kind of returning to, nature and things like that. So I've personally been enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, I think there's a big sort of desire to be outside. I mean, I'm sure that's part of it. But also, when I think of resilience, that's the first thing I think of, because what can be more resilient,
Yeah, very true. So next up, Judson Klein.
Things and Nothings by Judson Klein. It took him years to complete the list. The television a lake of color with its own sun pouring over his couch, the paid-for car in personal parking space 5, awaiting its next well-financed repair, The tables, the chairs, shelves, bed and dresser containing more clothes than he can wear, all well folded. Galaxies of movies on his remote. Bill is not due for a month or more. What's to do? Well, I'll go do it. The running register in his head. A lawn to relax on with reclining chair. If I could be calm for minutes. Messages on the phone. It's wallpaper art. The bliss of air conditioning, refrigerator humming, expansive bookshelf boasting knowledge, the DVD collection much less. It's all left me unwanting! And of course, something was missing, as he knew it would. When he thought of it, he looked to the air, where nothing was. She put the car in P, closed her eyes, and quietly gave thanks for another day of driving safe without insurance. But last month's rent was paid, though the late fee could have bought some groceries for days, or paid the electric bill. Oh, shit! Inside the refrigerator light exposed 3 slices of bread stale, a soft apple, a few eggs, and half a burrito stiff. The credit card was a raptor on her arm, the hot water scarce, the vacuum dying, heat a luxury well-timed. The time to get sick was never, the boyfriend wasn't faring much better. Her ribs rolling on either side. The antenna's local station's a pixelated mess. Dust was thick again. Nothing left to read. With another ugh, she stomped outdoors. Where? She raised her face to leaves rattling on blue sky. Drew the freshest breath. Took in the joy eternal. From nothing.
Wow. It's almost like you planned to talk about the resilience there, the ties between resilience and nature right before that poem.
Yeah. Well, that's just what
that was Ross, like.
That was one of those what Bob Ross calls a happy accident, because that wasn't actually planned. It just kind of fit really good. But yeah, I mean, you know, one thing that is interesting too is that, you know, it seems like in a lot of cases the people who have been through, you know, like just through the ringer, like just have the hardest, you know, things happen, and you know, like they just, because of that, it seems like they get really happy by the simplest things, you know, can just, like, despite all of the hardship, it's like they a lot of them find joy in just little things that most of us overlook on a daily basis. So, you know, like I really enjoyed that, because that to me was just like a perfect example of that. So, next up, poet from Delaware, Lindsay Collision.
Be Free by Lindsay Collison. Life feels broken. Tears fall freely. Soul needs to be awoken. Emotions fear me. Tremble as I stand. Let the world see me. 2 feet needing to land. To rise above and be free. From expectations given, from resentment inside, happiness is worth living. I am ready for the ride.
I love the resolve at the end of that one.
Yeah. No, that was great. And it was like, that one was like, it's one of those rhyming poems you don't even kind of realize is rhyming, because it just the rhyme fits so well into it. I know that, you know, in modern day there's a lot of anti-rhyming sentiment with a lot of poems, but I really think that's just because there's been a lot of poems where the rhyming didn't really fit so well, so it was kind of obvious that they were trying to do a rhyme scheme. But that one, you kind of, it just flowed with it so perfectly, so that was great.
Yeah, I agree.
Next, give it up for another poet friend from Wisconsin, Heidi Hallett.
Spring indigo, migrant jewel on the wing, through our fleeting stained glass spring, indigo bunting lapis shard, transient inlay on guard, then rising up, free to fly, indigo within the sky.
Well, Well, speaking of happy accidents, it just happened again. We're just talking about rhyming that flows really well, and we just had another perfect example of that.
We just started a roll today.
I guess so. Bob Ross would be happy. Especially because he loves nature. So.
And he was always happy.
Yeah. So, wow, we've had, like, so far, I'm just trying to tally, like, where all these poets have been from so far. We've had poets from, Long Island, New York, you know, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Delaware, New Jersey, you know, just so many different places so far. This is one upcoming from down by you in Virginia. Give it up for Brian Donnell James.
Good evening. My name is Brian Donald James, and I would like to read my poem, The Artist, as a part of the Trees in the Garden of Ashes anthology. The Artist. Depression is the canvas that we use to create beauty. Despair are the blank pages that we write upon to tell our stories. For we are the indigo children, born for this suffrage. For us, this is a mood familiar, and now is our time to recraft the image. So let us set fire to the crucible, turn and twist, lift a voice so that we can soothe and subdue, sculpt art in clay and etch away fear, light the kiln ablaze to form and shape, mold metal and copper, anxiety and doubt, dip brushes in uncertainty to paint our masterpieces in vibrant colors. For now is the time to make our dreams anew. Thank you.
Yeah, I really love that one. I love, like, the call to action that's in there, and it's something that I've kind of felt has been happening during all this, too, because the amount of, like, new creativity that's been springing up and, you know, the adaptability of poets and writers and artists and anybody who creates, because I've seen, you know, like, I remember in the beginning there were very few virtual poetry readings going on because, you know, people hadn't quite figured out the technology yet, but now I must get like 25 invites to virtual things a day, and that's just poetry. That's not counting, you know, like fiction book readings I've heard or online music concerts or things that people have been doing. So it's, you know, really have, you know, people, they really have figured out and adapted and in some cases, you know, grown and done a lot more than they would have otherwise. I know that a lot of people for the April Poetry Month, even though we didn't really get to enjoy the live events that we normally would have, a lot of people, you know, more people than ever, it seemed, finished the NaPoWriMo Challenge and, you know, were able to actually kind of get in touch with their writing again and even get over writer's block and all sorts of things like that. So.
Yeah, it's really great to see how people have adapted to everything. And, I mean, it's also always a pleasure just to hear Brian read. So thank you for that, Brian.
Yeah, I second that. Thank you for that, Brian, and thank you for the creative call to action or at the very least, affirmation of what's been going on. So, next up, Linda Fields.
To a newborn, 2020. You are the gift we waited for. Now you are here and innocent, blameless and naive, raw like unmolded clay, arriving in an outbreak of dirges echoing from empty rooms and beds, when people speak words for the dead and men cry for what they've seen. When our own reflection said, yes, we are weaker, poorer, sicker, bereft of love, compassion, harmony. You are the promise of a future, free of division and disease. No mother consumed with dread, no father confined in solitary, no children with visions of orphaned lives. There will be no talk of the expendable elderly or the ones too damaged to save, and no mention of those whose bodies were placed in unmarked graves. All are victims, the doctors said, of the ill-named threat we share. Call it happy hypoxia, a surprise attack that stealthily takes our breath away, and we don't realize what we're losing until we struggle to get it back. Here is my vision for you,
a child with the purest of hearts and unspoiled dreams, a road map yet to be drawn with approaching scenes to view. You will have a world with a future, an earth full of life, delightfully clean, where kindness abounds with a reverence for nature and everything.
Yeah, you know, that one brings up the interesting, thing of having a child during this, you know, this whole period. I've known several people who actually were either just recently had or were awaiting babies during this whole thing. And I've, you know, talk about adaptability. I know that a thing that's been going on has been these kind of drive-by baby showers where you set up, like, in, you know, your driveway, in front of the house or whatever, and then people would kind of come by just a couple at a time to kind of give congratulations and drop off gifts and then just kind of go on, so you didn't really have a congregation.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, even the hospital visit, the actual act of giving birth, must be somewhat terrifying considering things. So that's actually something I hadn't thought about. Like, I know some people who were supposed to get married during this whole thing, and who have had to put off their weddings. But, yeah, I never thought about the people who were children during this time.
Yeah, no, I was seeing, like, pictures of it, you know, from, friends of mine who were having, like, those drive-by baby showers and things like that. And then, of course,
that's
everybody...
That's a cool adaptation, though.
No, it is. It's like people are just figuring out ways to do everything, pretty much, you know, just despite everything, which is great. And on top of that, now, of course, everybody predicts that, this time next year, there's probably going to be a whole lot of new babies because of, everybody staying in COVID. So, we'll see. There might be the COVID baby boom next year, so we'll keep an eye on it for that. Next up, Michelle Oram.
Like a Tree by Michelle Oram. I am internally grounded, deep in the earth's crust. My branches nurture all who come to rest. I bend to the winds, never disconnected. My core values rooted deep within my heart. I stand tall, able to withstand life's deterrence, knowing I am enough. Join me in the gift of a new day, awakening the soul secured in the promise of a new spring. The rainbow blossoms of a bountiful summer dismiss all who stand in our way. As we pursue our dreams in the wintry mix of a confident tomorrow.
Another one where the last line really drives it home.
Yeah, that seems to be a continuing theme throughout this anthology. Really powerful last lines.
Yeah, I know. A lot of the poems in this kind of, have the motif of starting out, like, with the negative and then turning it around and making it a positive, like the, what Tolkien would kind of call the U catastrophe, where, you go from, something bad to something good, or, at least have the light at the end of the tunnel. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of, like, a lot of the question answers that we got, with the Mondo anthology and, the Mondo workshop that we did, where you had a lot of questions that were either neutral or somewhat negative, and then the answers were usually positive. So, it's really kind of uplifting to see that, that everybody turning it, putting the positive spin on it.
Yeah, I agree. It's always something we could use more of.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So the next reader, she's been on BardCon Virtual's Bard's Poetry Revolution quite a few times at this point. Let's give it up for Jamie Ann Colangelo.
Good evening, everyone. This is Jamie Ann Colangelo, and I will be reading my poem, So Much of the Sweetness in Life Comes from Family. The walls that surround me here could tell a tale or two, the times we had to share, and memories more than a few. For every passing year was filled with laughter, joy, sorrow, and tears, times I reminisce days after.
moments that I treasure, etched upon my heart, love beyond measure, never to be apart. My family's grown and gone from the walls that surround me here, but the memories live on, held always to me dear. Thank you for allowing me to share. God bless you all. I hope that you enjoyed it.
Well, thank you, Jamie. I certainly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I second that.
And another fine example of a poem that does rhyming rather fluid and really, really well built into the poem. Yeah, have a lot of examples of that tonight. So it's really, really cool.
It's always nice to see that, too, because I think what you said before about people getting turned off by rhyme because of so many poems where it is obvious. I think on the flip side of that, sometimes people are afraid to try it, you know, to try writing with rhyme because they're afraid of sounding obvious.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny, like, you know, the history of it, because, you know, a lot of poetry that came to the English language, first to England before it came to America, came from, you know, countries, you know, neighboring countries that did the Romance languages. A lot of them were much better equipped for rhyming. So, you know, a lot of the, you know, like, I mean, the Divine Comedy with Dante, it's like that, you know, the entire, you know, three-part series there, you know, full-length book form, all in rhyme, because it's in Italian where you have a vowel at the end of, you know, almost every word. So very rhyme-rich language, but, you know, the translations into English, you know, for a while they assumed that they had to be, you know, translated into rhyming as well. In English, you know, it's like one of those, it can rhyme or, you know, sometimes it can rhyme, sometimes it's not the best to rhyme. You know, it kind of can be either or, so, but they would kind of do that for a while, and so for so long everybody was rhyming, that was just considered, oh, it's poetry, it must rhyme, and then, you know, the era of, you know, Walt Whitman kind of happened, and then everybody's like, oh, so you don't have to rhyme, and then, you know, whatever happened in the 20th century, the kind of the ups and downs that sometimes people liked it, sometimes people hated it, so it's just funny to kind of see, like, how it evolves, but I am happy to see more poets kind of, you know, doing the rhyme thing again. It is kind of nice, because, you know, different strokes for different folks, but, you know, creativity in diversity and different angles.
Yeah, and there's definitely something comforting in it.
Oh, yeah. So, next up is Anthony Smith.
In this moment, the moon vibrantly glows, the stars in the sky shine brighter, the workload is lighter, families spend time, food tastes better, precious moments are one of a kind. The world seems to spin a little slower, the rat race is on pause, love is spread for a cause. We value each other, our earth, our mother, forgiving our foes, forgetting our flaws. As nature's glory grabs our gaze, the grass smells greener, the sun keeps beaming, the song sounds sweeter, listen contently as the birds keep tweeting. We look out for each other, we have time for our friends, matters of the heart, a simple embrace, family means more, life is adored. Our air breathe deeper, reflection our teacher, love our meaning, it's all in a feeling, it begins with a thought in this moment.
It begins with a thought. I really like that.
Yeah, me too. I might actually appropriate that line. That actually would make a great prompt in of itself.
Yeah, I agree. It begins with a thought because, you know, so many things really do, you know, like life is 90% in your head, you know, with the decisions that you make, and then, you know, 10% the actions that culminate from that. But so much of it, you know, whether you're holding yourself back or pushing yourself forward, it all kind of happens with the thought process, you know. So it is kind of great to see that acknowledged in poetry form. Anthony is one of our poets from across the little pond known as the Atlantic over there in the UK. I believe it was the Buzz and Bards anthology over there in Manchester that first became familiar with him from. So, yeah, you see that this book, it's not just national, but international. We've got poets from all over here. So, quick update. We've actually sold another 5 copies since the last update, so that's up to 114 copies of the Trees in the Garden of Ashes anthology sold. So, yay! Insert, insert clapping track. We've sold 20 copies live just during this launch so far. So, yay, always good. Next up is Carl Elder.
Arboreal. Life only as full as it is empty. You've chosen this lot, as if now sitting cross-legged, fixed on a huge hickory without thought, the tree caught growing a ring. Thing is, beneath trees you can't always see above, the soundest mind opines, nor ring the self of the ken of identity, when light's lost, insight sought in the squinting. Which degree on your watch's 360 shall no such thing as time's rev, chainsaw, sing, timber, stir you aware this is the blur, the snap, crackle, and whomp come crashing. Whether hear it here or on heaven's ground depends on definition of sound.
God, we're just being spoiled with good poetry tonight.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And that reading was excellent.
Yeah. No, just like, you know, that one, like, I think that the first line, the opening line, actually kind of really hooks you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I agree, the reading was great. So, yeah, I know. We are quite... quite lucky to have, you know, such a great, you know, and very talented lineup, you know, so I feel rather spoiled. So, next up is another poet from Wisconsin. Give it up for Jeannie Roberts.
When Eagles Reach Safety by Jeannie E. Roberts. Near Staghorn Sumac, between alder and bur oak, 2 Canadian geese encircled by goslings waddle beside pond, and beyond the chain-link fence atop electrical tower, a nest charged with osprey resounds, and past the weeping willow above the canoe where cattails rise and red-winged blackbirds call, bald eagles travel toward home, and as they fly, crows gang together, chase tail feathers, until white pine is spotted. Shalom.
Yeah, more nature, more, you know, just incredible talent and really good reading.
Yeah, I feel like I'm starting to sound like a broken record when I keep saying that, but it just keeps coming.
Yeah. I know. Well, there's only so many ways you could say something is good. It is. It's good to the good. You know, it's good. It's good squared. It's good times good. You know.
Definitely. So, I mean, as a workshop leader, I can definitely understand that. Sometimes you run out of words.
Yeah, I know. But poets are always great at utilizing them. So, as has been evident this entire reading so far. So we'll keep on going with the good words. Give it up for Joan Malloy.
Family by Joan Malloy. Sparrow's wing has broken, but sorrow has no place. Wind blusters joyfully, helping sparrow from tree to brook. Robin redbreast gathers insects, a picnic perfect for two. Rabbits act out stories. Deer sing gleefully in a chorus. Ducks dance skillfully on sparrow's favorite pond, putting on show after show, lifting sparrow's spirits with dance and song. Sparrow's wing is healing. Full flight, it will not be long. Sitting atop his favorite tree branch, heart bursting. He acknowledges his forest family. Sparrow sings a song of gratitude, a song of love.
That's another one I could just, you know, perfectly picture, you know, and also it just, I don't know, if for some reason it reminds me of the time that I had a, you know, I kind of had a sports-related injury and tore my ACL and had to spend time kind of recuperating. You know, I also had, luckily I had my family to be there for me and support me during that and a bunch of wonderful friends. So seeing that same thing but in bird form, you know, bringing the nature angle to it kind of reminds, you know, that, yeah, we're not all that different, you know, from nature. Sometimes we act like we're above it, but really we're just part of it. So, you know, and with that comes the infinite strength of nature, like you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Exactly. That resilience, that means
yeah.
We all have it.
Definitely. I mean, you know, it's funny because I was in a good mood, like, coming up to this reading already, just based on, you know, the results of it so far, but just sitting here hearing all this poetry, it's put me like even in an even better mood than I already was in. So, yeah, I you know, for all those listening out there, you know, with the poets in it, thank you for both elevating my mood, but also hopefully a lot of people out there who couldn't tune into it live will still listen to it later and then will, you know, still have their mood elevated after the fact. So, next, give it up for a poet from New Jersey, Lynette Esposito.
Hello, this is Lynette Esposito from Mount Laurel, New Jersey. I'm going to read my poem, The Power of a Seed. The subject interested me because what makes the biggest difference in our lives is the things that seed. The Power of a Seed. How many birds dying on breezes filled with seeds, tossed like dust pebbles filled with hope, scattering magic over a hungry land. Where there is a barren twig, green responds to the sun. Where there is dry dirt, sky tears moisten through the weeds, so daisies, tomatoes, and squash emerge when spring calls to them. All this from something so small, you would think it is nothing, like the power of the human heart, less than the size of a raspberry when first formed. Yet nurtured, it powers amazing things, gives itself wings like those that lift the birds who feast on seeded air.
Thank you, Lynette, for that reading. And, you know, that's another thing that I've noticed a lot during, you know, this crisis, because depending on where you are, you know, certain foods may not be as readily available. And I think this whole thing has kind of made people a little bit more aware of, you know, the concept of kind of growing your own food again, you know, or for people who kind of had that enthusiasm at one point but maybe kind of lost it a little bit, they've kind of started doing it again. I know that, you know, people have been planting quite a lot of seeds and growing a lot of vegetables and things like that. I've seen, you know, I've lost track of how many pictures of, you know, personal gardens I've seen, you know, on social media during all this. And, you know, that's something, it's kind of encouraging because, yeah, like we're so used to going places to get the food, we kind of forget, like, no, we could actually make some of it happen ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, also, especially right now, I know that, you know, just, again, thank you on behalf of Feeding America, which is why we're choosing them to, you know, give, you know, some of the profits of this to, because they've had about 8 to 10 times the demand that they normally do, and they've had about half of the help. And, not, you know, not for people not wanting to help, but just the fact that with a lot of things closed, you know, they're not able to get the same level of volunteerism, and they're not able to get the same amount of donations from, you know, food stores usually, or, you know, they're pretty bare at the end of the day now. They would get stuff from then. And also a lot of, like, the big, you know, the wholesale clubs, you know, Costco and BJ's and stuff like that, a lot of places, they're not open as much as they were, and they would get a lot of donations from, you know, places like that. So they're getting a lot less in that way. So, you know, every little bit helps in terms of helping that. So, again, thank you, everybody, for participating in you know, this fundraiser for that. So next up is another poet from Long Island. Give it up for Thomas Zampino.
Lazarus, like the phoenix before him, was raised up only to die again. But where the phoenix freed himself continually from everything that had existed before, Lazarus walked forward only once, and even then he remained forever drenched in the knowledge of his own death, a lingering stench that leaves us mindful even today of our own rebelliousness, our own powerlessness, our own death. We have come face to face with yet another Lazarus moment, a moment not unlike all those that have come before, a moment where renewal breaks in, desperate for our attention and clamoring for our help. And like Lazarus, we can react with force and determination, even if we find ourselves unusually broken, unusually flawed, and unusually aware of the limitations that remain ahead. We might envy the phoenix with its unending ability to begin again from nothing, unburdened as it was by a past finally heaped upon the ashes. But Lazarus taught us that we can always just start over again, right from where we are.
God, I mean, I don't know how many times I could say, wow, I loved that, but wow, I loved that.
Yeah, that ending was excellent, too.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing about that, like, especially with the phoenix metaphor and the idea of, you know, coming back to life from the ashes, for those out there, anybody watching the episode should, you know, obviously seen the cover of this book, but, you know, it's a photo of, you know, what was obviously a forest fire and then just a little budding green tree just kind of poking its head out through the ashes, just kind of signifying the rebirth of the forest that was burnt down, you know. So you got the phoenix metaphor there and the rebirth metaphor, you know, and the reinvention. And so there's just so much richness in that. And I feel like that poem was, you know, very much in keeping with, you know, that theme. So, that, you know, so thank you for that. So next up is Karen Coven.
Freedom by Karen Coven. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Janis Joplin. When I had everything, it never occurred to me to be grateful for a full jar of peanut butter. When I had every material thing, I was not happy. Everything was nothing. Now I'm alone, I'm broke, I am free. Nothing is everything. I am grateful for a full jar of peanut butter. I am grateful for peanut butter and jam for lunch. I am grateful for the time in the car when music is solace and open moon roof breezes dance in my hair like a colt's mane on a spring day.
That peanut butter line is such a good line.
Yeah.
You know, when I had everything, I wasn't grateful for a full jar of peanut butter. That was, you know, wow.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah, it speaks a lot to what we were just talking about earlier about, you know, people who go through a lot of legitimate hardship tend to just be grateful for, you know, so many of the small things because, you know, when it's taken for granted, we really don't appreciate it. And I know that it's a cliche to say that at this point because everybody always is like, be grateful, don't take it for granted. But, you know, it's completely the truth. It's like, you know, when you got an abundance of stuff, you know, you don't really feel it. It's not really important, you know. And, you know, but when you have a lack of stuff, everything becomes really important. So, you know, just stopping and being appreciative for the things that you do have. I feel like, you know, in Western culture sometimes, you know, we don't really ever expect anything to go wrong. We just, you know, we've kind of, and part of that maybe is the education, the upbringing, where we're always taught about however everything's going to work out, it's going to be wonderful, you're going to be amazing, super special, awesome, and all this stuff, but it's never really kind of built into the curriculum that, no, sometimes things just go wrong. So when they do go wrong, even if like 99 times out of 100 one thing goes wrong, we're more focused on the one thing that went wrong, and we act like that's somehow an injustice rather than just, you know, a part of existence. And, you know, some other cultures I feel a little bit more advanced than we are in that regard because they kind of just have it rolled into the fact that, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but they're not really as disappointed when it's bad because they just kind of know that's going to happen at some point, and they just kind of take it in stride and keep moving forward, you know, because then they know that, you know, the season will change and then good will come back again, you know?
Also, when you're in a world or a culture that tells you to expect certain things, you have a certain level of comfort, it can be really jarring when you don't have that comfort. And you think, and I think some people even get to the point where they feel like they're doing something wrong, especially if they grew up with a certain level of comfort. And then, let's say, you know, after college, weren't able to find a job that paid more than the minimum wage, and they had to live in really, like, horrible conditions compared to what they were living in. It's really easy to look at that and say, oh, no, you know, I'm doing something wrong. Or it sometimes can be difficult to appreciate it until you've lived in that situation for long enough. But when you're in a situation, you know, where you have the plenty and then it gets taken away, it's a lot harder to recognize the plenty that's still around you.
Yeah, because even in those bad conditions, you go to some other, you know, parts of the world. I mean, the average world income is less than $10,000 a year. The average world citizen lives on about $2 a day. You know, so even, you know, in that lesser condition than what you were used to, you're still, you know, pretty high up there in terms of the world percentage of comfort. So, it's all interesting things to think about because perspective and what goes on in the mind has a lot to do with the attitude. So.
Yep, it all starts with a thought.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. Gonna keep that line, you know, for a few things in the future. So, would you believe that we're on the last recording already? You know, like.
We are? Wow.
Yeah, we went through 32 poets. It didn't feel like, you know, that was a long time. It's like it's been an hour. It's been over an hour and 15 minutes already, and it's because each poem was just so effortlessly going into the next one. It just felt like it all went together so well, and it was just, you know, it was just a pleasure listening to all this, you know. So it's wonderful. So the last recording we have to share this evening is actually Judy Turek, a poet from Long Island, moderator of Farmingdale Workshop Group. So let's give it up for J.R. Judy Turek.
Embracing Change by J.R. Turek. Pandemic rules dictate change. No random shopping trips, no movie night, no diner stops at 3 a.m., no gatherings of any number outside members of your household, no handshakes, no fist bumps, no embraces. I miss hugs the most. Our world tilts like a wild carnival ride, and I don't like change. Don't want to adjust my schedule, my obligations forcing me to realign to off-kilter on my sanity scale. Calliope music fills my head. Stay home. Stay safe. Don't go out. Don't risk the embrace of a virus invading space where we should be praying together, meeting and greeting with hugs and kisses. Midway through this lockdown, the reason behind the mantra, stay home, stay safe, stay healthy, shatters my negativity. Stay home, stay safe, stay healthy, so others remain healthy. It becomes less obligation, more community service. Purpose-driven, I let my resilience guide me. Masked and gloved, we shop for seniors, groceries and pharmaceuticals, errands they can't run, and better that we, healthy and staying healthy, shop for them. Cautious to keep a safe 6-foot distance, keep them safe staying home, deliver their necessities with a kiss blown from a gloved hand. Doubts stuffed in the trash, fears forgotten in errands we relish, helping others becomes our new need. Consciously aware, devoted to doing. Pliant, flexible, resilient, we embrace these astounding changes.
And I think that one's a good example of what we were just talking about with the, you know, you hear something over and over until one day it finally clicks and then it has a whole new meaning.
Yeah. Definitely. And I mean, as somebody who's still going out, I can definitely relate to that. As somebody who hasn't been inside through this whole thing, as somebody who's been deemed essential, because, yeah, it's really weird saying to people, stay safe or stay healthy, as like your, what do you call the opposite of a greeting? I don't know. Whatever, when you're saying goodbye to somebody, it's like, you know, bye, stay healthy. It's like have a good night, you know? It's become that kind of phrase, and it feels like a really weird phrase to have to say, but at the same time, it is really nice because it feels like it holds a lot more meaning than, oh, have a good night, or, you know, happy holidays, or whatever the other parting phrase is. It feels like it has a lot more meaning, and it feels like it's a lot more genuine, like you actually do care that person stays safe and healthy.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I had taken into the habit long before COVID of telling everybody after live events, get home safe. So, you know, I kind of feel that. But, yeah, more people have been saying things like that. And so, yeah, it has been an interesting little add-on to the whole thing. So, yeah, well, that was the last recording that we had for the evening. We just breezed through 33 poets. You know, very pleasurable reading. Thank you, everybody who sent in. I'm going to actually sneak in a little poem of my own for this. The funny thing is that, you know, this anthology, it's like, you know, people, this past week, everybody sent in their corrections and all that and the proof. There's one thing that's missing from the anthology so far, and that's the poem that I'm putting in there, because I kind of been, like, racking my head around which one to put in there. You know, I'm always, you know, good publisher, but horrible poet sometimes. I always am bad with getting my own stuff in there. You know, I break my own rules about 57 times a day when it comes to poetry stuff, but I'm going to read this one actually from my second to last book, which is kind of weird to say at this point because I worked for 3 years on that one. But then because of the collaborative stuff, I came out with another book, you know, just a few weeks ago. So talk about the creativity, Brian James's call to action for artists during this period. I got a whole book just from that Facebook post that I did. But this poem is one about perception, like we've been talking about, and it's called My Flight Was Delayed. And you're not going to be able to see it because this is podcast style, but at the top of the poem it says, read down with a frown. My flight was delayed. Oh, God, I can't believe it. A 6-hour delay with nothing but books to read. Now I get to sit here. I had a very strict schedule. I had nonstop meetings delayed by 6 hours now. Another hustle and bustle. My flight was delayed. And at the bottom it says, read up with a smile. My flight was delayed. Another hustle and bustle delayed by 6 hours now. I had nonstop meetings. I had a very strict schedule. Now I get to sit here with nothing but books to read. A 6-hour delay. I can't believe it. Oh, God, my flight was delayed. I know that everybody out there who was at my book launch or heard that before, but it's one of those ideas of the same words just rearranged with a different attitude, having an entirely different meaning, I think. So,
yeah.
For the record, writing those up and down poems are, you know, a little bit harder than it looks sometimes. It took me quite a while to do that one, but yeah, kind of like everybody was giving me, notice that the grid poems were hard. Doing the up and down poems is hard. So.
Yeah, it's hard to order them in a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
When you write it one way and then have it actually make sense going the other way.
Yeah, definitely. So, okay, I was just looking at what the final tally was, and we sold another 7 copies since we last updated, which brings the total copy sold right now to 121. So
sold
20 copies live during you know, this reading, and the rest were pre-orders before. So, yeah. So that's pretty much we're at the end of the evening, which I really enjoyed. I thought that the readings were wonderful. I, you know, feel in a, you know, really good, uplifted mood now. So I hope everybody who is listening along feels the same way. And all of you who didn't get to hear this live but are going to listen into the recording, because I know there's a bunch of you, you know, I hope you enjoyed it just as much. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to actually keep the promise of the 50% for the next hour. So if you, you know, because we're ending, you know, slightly earlier than we anticipated, so I'm going to give it until 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you buy your copy before then, 50% of the profits will go to Feeding America. If you're listening to this later than that and you couldn't do it by then, Don't worry, because for the next week, we're going to still be donating 25% of the profits to Feeding America. So we really want to, help them out because they're having a tough time. But we've reached over our goal of providing 4,000 meals to the hungry. So thank you, everybody, who helped make that happen. Thank you all for being a part of this anthology. Thank you, Nick, for being here to be my co-host so that we could repeat how many times we loved everything.
You're welcome. Well, thanks everyone who contributed to the anthology. Thank you to all the wonderful readers we got to hear tonight and to everybody who's listening in at home. Hope you all have a great night.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody. Be safe out there. Keep writing, and we'll see you next time. Have a good one.
Bye.